who is a, a law professor, or a lawyer, or a very smart guy who writes a lot of very smart things, and so he's also a
I do. I teach, believe it or not, fashion, ethics, sustainability, and development.
Well, I think Jack is very well equipped to put us through our paces.
Yes.
So take it away, Jack, and thank you.
All right. Welcome, everybody. Glad to see you. I'm glad you're here on Thursday night to talk about ethics. First, I think what I would like to do is introduce our esteemed panel. We've already had Heidi, who our fearless leader. We have Donna Dickens of HitFix.
Yes, I run the Harvey blog, which is the intersection of geeky and feminism. So.
Then we have James Viscardi of comicbook.com.
And a drink.
I think we next have Casey Gilliam, Comic Book Resources.
Yes.
Joe Illich, also of Comic Book Resources, The Mission.
Yes, I write The Mission, which is a weekly column on diversity in comic books and graphic novels and entertainment.
And then at the end, we have Brett Schenker, who writes for Graphic Policy. Our format today is we're simply going to, I'm going to ask them a couple questions, or I'm going to ask them probably one question, and then they let me get back in, like 7:15 or something. I'm going to ask a couple questions and then throw it out to the audience. And I think the first thing I want to say with respect to this panel is that in a very real sense, everyone here is a panelist. Everyone here is part of the discussion. We do not view this as sort of an us versus them situation. This is not journalists and everyone else. Everybody here has a point of view, everybody here has a perspective, and I know we'd like to hear it, either in the Q&A session or if you tweet at us afterwards, email me, I'm at jeff.trex@gmail.com, whatever you want to do to get your point across, I'd certainly love to hear it because it's a fascinating topic. We certainly won't resolve all the issues tonight. One of the reasons that I feel this way about this particular panel is that I can speak for a number of us here, is that for us comics, it's not simply something we consume. We're not just consumers, it's a community. We're connected by our shared interests. We come together and we talk. With a shared interest come a number of shared values. So the question that I have to lead off the discussion with respect to journalism is this. In this community atmosphere, in this community sort of spirit that we have of shared interest, is the journalistic ethic dead? That is to say, are we in a place with respect to the comics community where we shouldn't be neutral, but we should represent a particular point of view and convey a particular set of values?
Question, Jeff. Well, you know what? I'll kind of jump in there a little bit. So just to kick things off, because I actually confronted that today, this very morning, and I went to a press breakfast in DC Comics, and I was meeting some of the people afterwards, and I was kind of explaining, you know, what I do at Publishers Weekly, which is over 100 years old. It's the Bible of the publishing industry, in case you don't know, and, you know, has a very long history of writing very, you know, neutrally sourced reviews, and it's just being a very sober reporter of the news, and, you know, which is what I reflect there. And then I was talking about the beat, and, you know, which is me. It really is me. I mean, I have other people, Jeff has written them, you know, Brett has written them, and, you know, anyone else in this panel, I hope you get it right for me someday. But it is my sensibility, and very much it's my filter through my worldview, what I think is important. And, you know, I think it was a little bit weird, because I could see that we were having one conversation about, oh, cover this, and I was like, you know, that beat, and I was sort of like, you know, I don't quite know how to deal with that. And so, you know, that is something I struggle with. I think people find it unusual that I might have two outlets like this, and I would approach them both very differently. You know, I mean, there's a lot of things that I would write for BW that I wouldn't write for the beat, and vice versa. You know, I'm very, I wouldn't say it's a Maginot line, but, you know, I do have guidelines in my mind for what is appropriate for either outlet. And, you know, I think we are living a time of personal expression, and I think it's very primary. And you know, in my last 11 years as a comedy journalist, I do notice there are two things that people like. They either like inside their numbers, or they like inside their fights, you know, or inside their period. So it's like, you know, it publishes weekly, they love numbers, and they say, oh, this is how much it sold, or that. You know, and then every other way, they kind of love, like, you know, did you hear what happened at Hall H today?
I was going to say, I feel like comics and video games and movies, television, it's, you're reporting on it, but it's also mostly an opinion base. You're consuming something and then telling other people, I like this, I didn't like it, and hopefully good reasons behind one way or the other. So it's very difficult to say, read a comic, like I just read the second issue of Starfire, and I loved it. But you can't, I have to say that, and then I give my reasons. I can't just say, X, Y, Z happened. It's very cut and dry as opposed to a news type story.
Do you draw a difference between the value of taste in terms of aesthetics and values in terms of, say, social right and wrong? Like you mentioned the Starfire, would be one example.
Right.
So the portrayal of Starfire just versus the story.
I think it's, for me, it's connected because comics are such a visual medium. If the story is really well written, but Starfire is drawn in a way that turns her from a superhero into an object with a, like, Escher spine, that's a little bit harder to take because it takes away from the good storytelling. For example, in the new one, she is still sexy. She has her long fire hair, and she has her midriff exposed, and she looks really good. But it's not drawn in a way that turns her into a thing. Like, she's always Starfire, she's always a person, she's always the hero, she's never turned into her parts where they cut off her head or they do crazy things with her body so that, you know, her boobs and her butt are both facing the camera. They treat her with respect as a character. Yeah.
Anyone else from the panel?
I think about journalism in terms of building community, and in my role at CBR, I have the privilege of covering the Image Comics beat, and in a lot of instances, I'm talking to creators who are launching their very first book, and let me tell you, look to your left and look to your right. These are the people who are going to be writing the comics you're reading tomorrow, and I consider it a huge honor to sometimes be the first journalist they talk to and to help them establish themselves in a new way in the community. When I think about the people that are reading the things I'm writing, I also think about them as my community. Whether they agree with me, disagree with me, the important thing for me is that I'm reflecting what is accurate of the community and the portions that I represent or have a connection to. I'm, you know, like Heidi said, knowing your audience is crucial, and understanding what they come to you for and understanding how to challenge them and to bring new things to them and to represent yourself as well as the site you're writing for in the best way possible.
Do you think it's possible to divide, and I don't mean exactly one-to-one tracking values, but do you think it's possible to divide the comics community, say, into the Fox News comics community versus the CNN comics community? That is to say, do we all have shared values on everything, or are there some radically different things to which we need to be sensitive?
I think it depends on what you're reading for, and that could change five times in a day. that's why it's great to have different people writing about comics, is understanding those approaches. Where I think there's absolute value is being able to have conversations about those approaches, understand what they're rooted in, and understand what the desired outcome is, so that you're not reading an article like, oh my god, this play-by-play of Starfire is so boring, and it's spoilery, and now I hate it, where I'd rather read why I'm interested in something. So I don't believe that comics readers ever just read one site or run one writer and go, that's cool, I'm done. I don't need any more comics news. They want to hear from a variety of people, and they want to be heard as well.
Yeah, to answer your question, journalistic ethic is not dead at all, and I don't think that it has to be neutral. As a matter of fact, I do think it should be personal, because I feel like people connect to real people. So the mission is an editorial column. It is an op-ed, but what I realize is really important is to support it with facts and statistics. So usually I will do a lot of real-world research and bring some statistics to back up a point of view. The subject of diversity is very much at the center of entertainment today. So if I'm going to do a comparison between, say, the female Thor and the black Captain America, both of them represent diversity, but both of them are not treated equally from a business standpoint by their publisher, and the examination of that is valuable. So when I can bring real statistics into the picture, I feel like it makes for a good grounding for my opinion. Now, on the other hand, one column that I did that got a lot of attention was a column on Power Girl from DC Comics, which had no statistics in it whatsoever, and was really based upon my time as an editor on DC's Birds of Prey, when Power Girl was in the book, and just the transformations that the character has gone through the years. And it was really a question about what is Power Girl as an archetype for female empowerment. She's pretty complex. I think she's simple, but she's one of the more complex ones. So even though that was opinion-based, the way I approached it was as an open question, and it invited discussion. So the need to be personal, I think, is crucial, because otherwise you can write the most thoroughly researched article, but it'll just lack something to it. Mm-hmm.
So you would say, to give it an example, do you read the Jill Lepore op-ed on women in comics?
Now, is that the one that totally went to town on A-Force? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Well, see, that's an example of not doing your research.
Yep.
Basically, before you're going to judge something, it would be a good idea to read it. And I actually did a post on Facebook this week where I basically said, do not condemn something before you examine it, because someone I know posted an article on the Boom series Strange Fruit by Mark Waid and J.G. Jones, which of course is leading to a lot of controversy in light of the recent developments in South Carolina with the Confederate flag and Gwen Newsom. And he basically just put it there, and a lot of people started talking about it, and then he said, okay, I'm just going to walk away now. And I asked him, I said, did you read the book? And he said, no. And so I said, you know, that it was irresponsible of you to start a fire and then just walk away. And I don't care if it's social media. Social media, I think, still requires some kind of ethics. And so I treat it the same way. So yeah, that is a perfect example of judging something without doing the homework so that you can have an informed opinion. And that's why she was understandably blasted from all sides.
Now, Brett, you did your homework on, you wrote about Air Boy recently.
Oh, yeah.
I wonder what you have to think about this.
Yeah, so, I mean, our site, the taglines were comic books and politics meet, so clearly we've got an opinion and are coming from an angle. And while we do general comic news, I mean, the stuff that we like to do is the opinion, you know, pieces, doing research and looking into stuff. When Air Boy came out, one of my co-hosts on our podcast was like, did you read it yet? And I was like, no, because you like the book and you're going to cover it, so it's less I have to read. And she's like, you need to read it. So about like 15 minutes later, I went through it, and I am her, and I think my I am bad was holy shit. And I was just like, well, what are we going to do? And she's like, well, I'm going to go ask a trans person about it, a friend of ours. I was like, okay, great. So for those who don't know, the second issue, like half the book had questionable material when it came to you folks of transgender status. So our friend read it, and they came back, and she was like, I'm beyond offended by this book. And it went from there. It was like, okay, you're the transgender individual, you're on another site, you should write the initial piece, we'll follow up with ours like a couple minutes later, I'll read yours just so I'm not copying yours. And we spent 2 hours going back and forth, parsing every word that we used. I am a, you know, white, pretty boring male, so making sure that all the terms are correct. And we got our pieces up, and nothing happened, and we said, this is crap. No one's paying attention. Let's kick it up to the next step. And my day job is working in politics, so that's the first thing I go to is activism. So we started a little Twitter campaign that got some notice, and it went from there. But that's our angle, and that's our site, and that's kind of what should be expected. And we've done it before, and we'll do it again, and we thought it was the right thing to do. So in that case, it was news from a personal place. And hopefully we did some good off of it, but you know, that's, you shouldn't expect anything different from us. We put it out there exactly who we are and what we do.
What's, James, do you want to weigh in on this as well?
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, our site, comic.com, is very, a lot of people who are coming to our site are people who are typing in movie character, TV character, plus comics. And so they're coming to the site. I mean, one, I have a pretty good domain name for that. So, and so a lot of what we cover is, you know, we try and treat comics as movies. So, you know, when people are coming to our site, they're in the same way that box office number stories on any other site, you know, just people love that stuff. We try and present comic sales sort of in that same way. But whenever something, whenever various news and things like that will come up, and, we'll cover it in the way that we normally do. But whenever something comes up that is usually a bit more on the controversial side, we'll make sure that, one, if we are going to cover it, that we're presenting it in a way that someone who has no idea really what, you know, comics are and what, you know, the community is like, are able to explain why it's, you know, why it's making headlines and things like that. And so it's one of the great things of being able to have, you know, quite a number of contributors to the site is because, you know, we will normally have one person sort of take point on a story, but a lot of people will chime in from the site. So that way, you know, all angles are, you know, going to be able to be covered. And that way, you know, if our readership has questions, you know, one of the things that we very actively do is jump back into the comments of the story and just, you know, further take the case to the point.
It's very interesting to the slight difference between what you're talking about and some other folks have been talking about on the panel. When you mentioned that, like, the people are coming to us via a search, and we're treating it like they're used to seeing things in terms of movies, and we're trying to reach out to them as if they had never, you know, we assume they didn't have knowledge. That's sort of reaching out beyond a particular community of shared values to maybe draw them in.
Right. But, yeah. Well, that's one of the great things is that. You know, one of the top stories, especially during TV season, are like during Arrow and Flash and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and stuff like that, we do Easter egg posts that are like, here are, you know, the various references to comics. And, you know, I wish Comixology had a referral program because I would link to literally all of that stuff. But people are emailing us and saying, you know, thanks for doing this. I'm going in and I'm diving in to try and, you know, and figure this all out.
That actually basically...
Yeah.
That actually raises a question, that referral thing that ties back to what Greg was talking about. So you led this campaign to deal with this issue of the issue in the issue of Airboy. So we have one person saying, let's let people have access to this particular issue, and you're saying maybe people shouldn't have access to that particular issue. Is there a point at which comics journalism with a sense of values crosses into censorship? What's the difference between censorship and responsibility?
There's a massive difference. So immediately when we tweeted up, I think within 30 seconds, someone claimed censorship and banning. Banning, censorship, and pulling something are three totally different concepts. I did a post on it because people kept on conflating the issue. It was clear that anyone that brought up censorship and banning and mixing that up with pulling were doing it to deflect from the issue and didn't want to talk about the issue and just wanted to be defensive and not have a conversation. And there's a huge difference. Banning tends to actually be a government action. I'm not an elected official. We may go towards elected officials, so it's not the right term. Censorship is preventing an idea from coming out. The idea was already out there, so it's kind of hard to censor it. And I come from a world where action is speech. So asking the publisher to pull something is asking the publisher to take action and exercise their own speech. Just because free speech exists, which it actually doesn't, but let's say it does, doesn't mean you get a platform. So the publisher could take a stance and use their speech and pull the book. And the creators could sell it on their site and push it themselves. And they are more than welcome to do that. So we basically were asking the publisher, do you stand behind this? Is what the point of our whole action was. And I think a lot of that was missed. And then on top of that is, you never go into debate with your fast to say you want. So we asked high. I've never gone to a job interview when I said, no, I want only $30,000 for salary. I want no benefits. And I'm like, no, I go in and ask for a really high number and ridiculous things, and they give me what I want eventually. So that's what we did.
Don't you think that because the book was published by Image, theoretically, you know, for all intents and purposes, Image is just, they're printing the book. And
they have no stake in
it. You know, like they've got no stake in terms of whether the book lives or dies. I mean, obviously they gave the book the green light, but
they have their store. I mean, they've got their online store.
Right.
They have their social, you know, networks that they can push something. They have Facebook. They can tweet about stuff. So they can still provide it support and some promotion. So that's basically where pulling your support on the promotion is what it came down to. It. And maybe if we used those exact words, people would have kind of understood it a bit more. But that's not what we said. And then the other thing was, is at the point that action happened, we were talking about this issue for 36 hours, and it had no traction. Like, for the 36 hours, it was three that were actually kind of getting this going, and then about six other people on Twitter. Most of the conversation was...
Well, you know what, though? I actually disagree with that a little bit, because I feel like you and I were talking about it. You know, I'll jump in here. I'll say that Brett and I were talking about this while this happened. And, I'm just to back off a little bit, it's like, I don't go into a story deciding what happened, you know? I mean, even when it's all, you know, like table meat, and I know you compared it to table meat, you know, everybody knows about the thing where the guy took too many tables, right? And like, it's hot fire, and this is exactly what I was talking about before, where this idea of the guy stealing tables at a con really caught fire, and you are right that the, you know, the professional community was really incensed about the guys doing it. Okay, that really hit them where they live in the pocketbook. So it was very, very, you know, near them. And, you know, I mean, I follow these controversies. Like, I mean, I have a little alarm bell in the bat cave, the beep cave, that goes off when one of these things happens. Okay, I don't say how I do it, but I do. And so I saw the Airboy controversy unfolding in a pretty typical way, you know? There was like a specialty site that, you know, your friend had written about, a very powerful piece about what was wrong with it. And then I saw a couple of other, you know, similarly very passionate places with small audiences picking up on it. And, you know, you did your thing, and that was day two. So that was about right. I mean, that was about how you said, and I noticed I was also following along on Twitter. And I mean, I would say that I saw, you know, a pretty reasonable amount. I could see that it was ready to blow. It was ready to blow at any minute, you know? And I mean, I think you absolutely did up the stakes. There's no question about it. I mean, you definitely, you know, raised the stakes on it. But, I mean, the way these things go is, like there's, you know, either it's like the table gate that hits right away, and everybody understands immediately what the stakes are. And, you know, I would say Airboy was a simmer. Slow burn, and you know, I mean, you definitely.
There's almost like a formula to it.
Yes, there is absolutely a formula to it, and you know, and then the Mary Sue got involved, you know, and I mean, for better or worse, I love that site, you know, but I mean, they really have a viewpoint on it, and their readers are, it's a call to action for them, you know? So I mean, I would say Airboy was not going to go away, and James was going to apologize. From the minute that issue came out, James was going to have to apologize. That was done. That was absolutely going to happen. So, I mean, I think you pushed it along a little quicker, probably, by taking more extreme action. But it was, you know, the car was on the road. You know, maybe it was going to stop off for donuts first. I don't know. But it was on the way.
John, I saw you. Do you have anything to add to this? I saw you.
Oh, no, it's just interesting. I was just going to add on to what she said, where it, and he said it was, it's like a formula, because it's not just comics, it's any community. There was a huge kerfuffle last week in the book community with John Green, and there's just every community has this cyclical thing that happens where one thing happens, and because social media is such the way we communicate now, it just snowballs so quickly. And I can remember coming into my Twitter account for Tablegate, and I had no idea what Tablegate was. We had been traveling with our kids, and I was just like, what is happening?
That's shocking that nobody knows what Tablegate is.
That's not
amazing.
Home at all.
And when you don't know...
I thought you love comics.
I do, but I also love 4th of July barbecue. So.
I think those are some ethics to talk about.
Yeah. 4th of July barbecue ethics? Those sparklers are going to get you, man.
But what you're saying is right. Any issue, you can predict it. It's, we have a problem with this. We have a problem with you having a problem with this. Oh my God, why do you have a problem with us having a problem with this? And then the source of it says, well, wait, did you guys forget that I did this thing? Like, it goes so quickly into examining why people are allowed to have different points of view instead of seeking to understand why something is creating controversy or why something is sparking questions. If I wrote something, if I published a book and nobody had questions about it, I would be failing. There are times and places to make people very uncomfortable, and there are ways not to do it that are a public learning curve. And in terms of losing sight of what we're even talking about, it goes so quickly into the attacking phase.
And I think that what you were saying about it's a learning curve is true for everyone, even, you know, comic artists, authors, journalists. Social media is such an immediate way to say anything without thinking about how it's going to affect other people. I hate to use the John Green example again, but his friends defended him because that's what friends do. They come to your defense, but then they're defending him against a teenage girl. So then the teenagers are like, why are these celebrity people like yelling at us? They weren't yelling at them. They were just defending their friend, but you can see where they thought it was. And it just becomes this huge morass of everyone go to your room and nobody come out and talk to each other for at least 48 hours.
I saw that, like, Lexi Alexander was like tweeting and, you know, against John Green. I was like, oh no. No, I
want
to be all
on the same side.
But
I'm
sorry.
Were you about to
lean in
and say something, Joe?
No, this one I'm listening. I'm enjoying this.
I want to raise the stakes a little bit on this one in terms of journalistic ethics. You're talking about this cycle. It just keeps going and going and going. Sometimes it gets broken in a dramatic way, as like with guns. So we have an instance with the Charlie Hebdo cartoons and the Muhammad cartoons, all that sort of thing. Are there indeed things like that really should be printed? What do you think about the ethics of that that we brought about, punching up, punching down, by journalists? Is there a limit on what we can say and who we can talk about?
You're looking right at me, so I guess you're...
Yeah. Well, the Tablegate thing invoked pretty much everything like that.
Yeah, no, sorry, got any thoughts? I don't think that you should ever not be allowed to say something, but personal anecdote time. I was supposed to have a Harpy meetup with my fans while I was here. It was very last minute. I've had some questionable people in my Twitter mentions and on our comments, and we had no way of providing me with secondary assistance while I was going to be at a bar waiting for strangers to show up. And as a woman, I had to explain to my boss and a couple other men in my office that I was not comfortable with having a meetup without some kind of security net just because of that kind of thing. So I think that while you can say what you want, you have to be cognizant at least that there are scary people and try to protect yourself. And obviously it doesn't always work, but you should never not say what you're going to say because you're afraid that the end game will be you're going to get shot over a comic.
Yeah, I'm in total agreement with that. I mean, one thing that really brought things into focus for me was when journalist Janella Selin started receiving death threats because of the opinion she put forth about a DC Comics cover. and how female characters were portrayed, and that just made it clear to me that the risk that you take communicating your opinions because of the internet is that there's a very thin, semi-permeable barrier between you and people who do not have proper restraint. And that's pretty scary, and it does, in some ways, disincentivize me from engaging everyone on Twitter. I definitely don't engage the comments section for my columns. And one thing that I admire that Comic Book Resources did, and Casey, I think you can speak to this, is when they basically created a line and said, comments that go beyond the appropriate are not going to be allowed here anymore. And I'm hoping that that is basically the starting point of what is going to be standard operating procedure, because I think the future of journalism and the community relationship that you spoke about between us and you is mutual respect. So if I put forth something respectfully, then let's have a respectful discussion about it, and I'm totally open to that. I had a situation recently where I wrote a column about DC Comics' Grayson series and my opinions on how I felt that the Helena Bertinelli character was, in a sense, exploiting the marketability of black women and interracial couples without ever really identifying the character as black. The character is colored in some way where she might be black, she might not be. And the co-writer of Grayson, Tim Seeley, reached out to me on Twitter. And because of that, we actually had an offline discussion. And 2 weeks later, I wrote a column in which I did apologize to him and the creative team, because I felt that while I communicated what I felt was the intention of the publisher, and the publisher is not a person, the publisher is a corporation, and their first mandate is money, what I did not make clear was the separation between the intention of the publisher and the intention of the creative team. And there are good people that work for organizations that are nowhere near as moral and forthright as them all the time. And so mutual respect is going to have to be the future of this relationship. And so, like Donna said, you can't not say anything. I do think the important thing is that you're saying it for the good of the public. If you are really saying it just to get hits or just to incite a fire, that I consider irresponsible and pretty unethical.
I think it's really difficult to talk about ethics in anything without talking about accountability and what is and isn't appropriate. Your example is appropriate accountability. You had a discussion, you worked it out, you changed your point of view. There are levels of accountability, and I'm sure everybody here has a story where Janelle is a perfect example. I'm friends with her. I saw her go through that, and it's harrowing. There are things that should never happen to anybody. There are levels of accountability that, for F's sake, you wrote a comic book. And yes, what we're talking about is incredibly important, and in the public there are different groups of people that are underrepresented, that are misrepresented, that are intentionally and intensely misrepresented, and the level of accountability goes to a place where it's uncontrollable. In terms of the CBR forums, like you said, they are a community, and deciding what we will and won't tolerate is... You know, you spoke earlier about censorship. That's something that got thrown around like crazy. And defining the terms under which we're going to interact with each other isn't anywhere close to that. And it's really thinking about how do we want to be treated and how are we ever going to get past something and make something better.
The best description I've ever heard, because we've started to crack down on the way that people talk to each other on our side as well. The best description I ever heard for a comment section is that it's your digital living room. And if someone comes into your living room and starts vomiting slurs at you and throwing corn in your face, you're gonna tell them to get out of your house. And if they don't, then you will throw them out of your house. It's not that you don't want people to have differing opinions, you just want them to not be really creepy about it.
It's interesting that when the internet started, it really was this, you know, secret DARPANET thing, and you know, it was considered to be a public forum discourse. And as it did go with all the you know, the chat rooms and the ICQs and all the weird things that we used to have, like it became this Wild West thing. So, you know, Claymore's, like, when I started on the internet, you know, a long time ago, I mean, it was like, oh yeah, you know, you've got to be ready for Claymore. And, you know, like you said, when you said that, you know, we've just started to crack down, I was like, on my side, that was like day one, because I knew the minute you allow, like, people to come in and disrupt it, it becomes a cesspool. And I have zero tolerance. I do not, and I'm happy to say, I mean, you know, I think I said the same thing on the panel last year, but, you know, some people say, hey, your comments are horrible. So I'm like, have you read any other sites? I mean, mine are pretty, I'm happy to say, I'm really proud to say, my comments are very well, you know, modulated. People know they can't just go there and spew off. I think
well, it's interesting because a lot of sites have, and it, you know, when it comes to a commenting type thing, right, there's a number of different options. You can do discuss, you can do, you know, your own comment system, or you can, you know, or do Facebook comments. And, you know, when you're doing, when a site sort of goes either in, like, the Facebook or the discuss, you know, direction, at what, you know, are they still in, your living room, or, in the, or are they in someone else's, or are they in Facebook's? And so... you know, and but that's on, I think, on the responsibility of the site to say, you know, this is what the parameters that I want to send. Like, one of the things that we do on our site, we have our own, you know, comment system because it's, one, easier to moderate, but two, you know, there's a lot of things that go on, you know, things like Facebook and things like that that people think are socially acceptable, and, you know, there's no real way on, you know, Facebook for someone to take down someone's comment or go after them, and so.
No, it's out.
Yeah,
I have a bunch more questions, but I want to before I don't want to bogart the conversation. So, does anybody have any questions out in the audience? Aha, gentleman who's right by the microphone.
He was ready.
Yeah, that's it.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello, Mr. Village.
Oh, hi. How are you?
Work on the same thing, Geico series, which is my favorite content. I would like to kind of ask about, you wrote an article on Mission about the Black Lives Matter, and you mentioned how you, essentially the solution that in your opinion would be, you know, have black writers write black characters, and it was like the only, besides my own, I wrote, the only article or essay on it that kind of critiqued it in a thoughtful way, and the other ones I saw, Prophet, and then all kind of like reactionary, this is great because it's Sam Wilson in Captain America costume. And because Captain America is black, that's automatically good. Do you or anyone else think that because people would like to see a change in culture and community, that they're willing to put out a spouse praise without actually critiquing and thinking about it thoughtfully? You're just kind of reactionary trying to say good things about what they'd like to see rather than actually thinking about what it is.
Okay. Tricky. I think, okay, tell you a story. I was at Special Edition, SENYC, the Special Edition Con in New York. I'm talking to Steve Orlando, who's the writer of DC's Midnighter. And a guy comes up, and he's a friend of Steve's, and Steve introduces me to his friend. And his friend says to me, yeah, Marvel's really doing a lot to push diversity. And I said, no, they're not. And I basically said, you see how I pick up this book? You see how I put it back down? I said, that is how easily Marvel Comics could hire a black writer to write the Captain America comic book. So there's, I think, a tendency to want to easily, as you said, espouse praise. And praise has levels of measurement. You know, what you do. And the latest Mission that I wrote basically put forth the idea that what Marvel Comics was doing was a half measure. So they have a diverse universe, but when you look at most of the writers are white. And it's ridiculous to say only writers of a certain gender or ethnicity or sexual orientation should write similar characters, but there has to be equality and opportunity. So, for example, Greg Rucka isn't white. I mean, Greg Rucka is white. Greg Rucka is not Latino, but I do feel like he wrote some of the best Renee Montoya stories that have ever been written on that character. And that's because he got into the essence of the character, and he got into the essence of her life. And so, exclusivity isn't the issue. The issue is how much you care. And the thing about Captain America to me that is truly strange is that Captain America doesn't really seem to contribute to the Black American narrative. And I'm not saying that you have to make it a story about that, but the same way that when Christopher Priest wrote Steel, and he had this scene in which John Henry Irons couldn't catch a cab in New York. And, I mean, Steel's a member of the Justice League of America. He saved the universe from Mageddon, you know? But just when you have a scene where a black man can't catch a cab in New York, that's when you make it real. And the story's not about that, but you have a responsibility to bring that forth. So I feel like what we have to do as journalists is you can examine accomplishments, but you have to examine them with measurement, and you have to be willing to not, for lack of a better term, kiss ass.
I believe there was a gentleman there, right? Who was second?
Okay. Question. You came to something like Airboy, you're kind of pointing out something you think to be negative. Are you ever afraid that a comic that maybe anyone from like 30 or 50,000 people would see now, because of what you're saying, 100,000 people might see because of all the, like, all hullabaloo around it, for lack of a better word?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm anti-outrage. You know? I mean, I think there are things that really are outrageous. I think there are things that really matter. And, you know, like, but I mean, I'm being schooled. I mean, I apparently have, like, a threshold that's like this, you know? I'm like, you know, the Hulkbuster or something. So, you know, I mean, I try to listen to other people. And, you know, with Airboy, I mean, I read the issue, but I was like, you know what? I need to see what they're talking about. I mean, I agree. And, you know, I said, you know, again with Brett, I said, you know, I see when you're calling to pull this, you see this is something very dangerous. You know, so you're saying this is like an airbag, this is a faulty airbag that might really harm people. And I understand that. And, you know, that's why I felt Airboy. I mean, I really felt a lengthy thing about Airboy. And I felt that was important enough that I needed to really write about it. But, you know, a lot of things, I'm like, you know what, the guy just did it. You know, I mean, I could go into my comics collection and pull out panels, put them up on the blog, and, you know, no one will be able to walk through here, you know? I mean, it's endless. And that's me, you know? That's just me personally, and I know other people feel very strongly, and I, you know, I support their, you know, their right to speak out on it.
So. But I think it also brings it back to that community aspect of comics, right, where, you know, we are a community of people who are reading and, you know, and learning and enjoying stuff. So when something like that happens, you're letting the community know that, you know, this is something that happened, you know, in comics. This is something that can happen in comics. You know, it's not always going to be rainbows and sunshines. You know, there will be instances where things like this will happen. And so to prep that community, to let them know that things like this are possible, I think you owe, you know, the community that.
I'll quickly say that because of what happened, I didn't buy Airboy 2. I bought Airboy 1, I didn't buy Airboy 2, and I'm not buying any more copies of Airboy. So if 10,000 more people buy it, you know, here's one person that won't, and I knew that enough of my peers would talk about it, so there's no reason that I have to help push that book towards a further sales threshold. So the writer can make more money on royalties.
I see they're going to start telling me to speed up. So next question. Hope you don't mind.
I guess I want to go with the outrage, I suppose, that surrounded the start of unfair that a character, like the sole female character on, say, the Avengers, has to represent all women.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Right. We allow them to have more than one. They can't talk to each other. So,
yeah.
So we're screwed.
Absolutely. What I'm trying to say, I guess, is I don't know what your opinions are on Agent Carter.
I love Agent Carter.
Okay.
More Agent
show.
Carter.
Yep.
I feel like the character wasn't well. I'm not sure if I just missed it, or I feel like she had very many flaws. Like she was a sort of Mary Sue who could do everything right and didn't.
Well, I mean, boys have had that story for 8,000 years. It's finally time for us to get one.
There's a story within the idea of her problems all being external. There are so many times where there are stories about any gender of character where it's all about our core flaw. The core flaw in Agent Carter's story is that everybody treats her like shit. And that is a very real experience for a lot of competent, skilled women. And that is one of a million stories that needs to be told. So I don't look at Agent Carter and go, that's every single woman ever. Wow, that's me too. I see there's a part of me, there's a time in my life where I have felt that way. And it's a moment in time of connecting to it, not an overall narrative about what it is to be a woman or to be a woman in this universe.
And it's very subversive in that even like Dottie or Angie, every woman in that show was dealing with being controlled by the structure, not by individual men, because they are decent enough guys. They're just a product of the society they live in. And
it's sort of the origin story of patriarchy.
Yeah, the origin story of the patriarchy in post-World War II America, where the women did everything while the men went to fight, and then the men came home and said, give us our toys back, and the women were like, no, you really can't have them back. And so Dottie is dealing with the Russian spies, and Angie's dealing with the fact that she wants to be an actress, but you have to live in like an all-girls apartment. It's so weird and creepy. And then Peggy is so competent, but no one at her work acknowledges that she is competent.
So let's just say one more thing, like, in that, yes, she did get treated like shit, but why is it that female characters have, for them to be, I guess, interesting, they have to be a bit like a victim, or they can't have personal flaws. Like, you can't have...
Sorry, I'm gonna, I've just been given one more question.
Okay.
So if you don't mind, I want to bet Captain America.
If you want to come find us after the panel, I'm sure we'll all be super happy to talk about that.
We'll talk about it, you know, later on, or as Jeff said, you know, but I just a short version. It's like, yeah, you know, when there's one woman, she does stand for everything. And you know what? That's bad storytelling. It's like, let all the characters... That's why people love Mad Max. Fury Road. It's because the characters all had their own agency, and they were, you know, doing their own thing. I mean, even though there was baggage in the story, it was like it was just part of this, you know, amazing narrative. You know, it had themes, but I mean, I don't know. I think that's what I think.
I'd say Run to Stumptown. You want a female character who's fantastic and flawed. I mean, well,
you know
plus it's Rucka kicks ass when it comes to female characters.
So. You know what? I people said that Jurassic Park. Character was sexist, and you know, I guess she was. I kind of found it refreshing in a way that they took the wonky, obnoxious bureaucrat and made that the love interest. I, you know, to me, it was like, oh, that's cool. You know, the girl can be obnoxious, horrible, and run out the company too. You know?
It's just a product of having so few characters that the one you have has to be all things.
Put that last thing in question.
One last question.
Come on up, Captain Matt.
So my question is, in your collective exploration of comics over the last 30, 40, 50 years, in terms of being inclusive and sort of being having that diversity, are we getting better overall? Are we getting worse? Or are we just in a stable state?
I think in terms of, you know, growth as a community, and this is just me talking straight up numbers based on what we see, you know, from analytics on the site.
I think you are seeing
though, based on, you know, any of number of the editorials that are being written on any of the various sites, the accessibility of comics is growing, and so because of that, more people are coming to join our club. And that means more people are wanting to write about comics. And so, you know, whether it's at my site, whether it's at CBR, or at, you know, at the Beat, there are more people who are interested. And because of that, you know, I would say that it's not going as fast as I think anyone would like, but I think it's definitely going, trending in an upward direction.
I've just been told to stop, so we're going to close it on that.
Thank you.
This is clearly we didn't get to the end of the answers to that question. In fact, I don't think we got to the, I don't think we solved the problem. So the conversation is going to be ongoing. I look forward to hearing more from you on our various comment threads, whether they're a living room or some other room, in the room. And thank you so much.